It is time to be joined by our good friends over at the Berkshire Edge, theberkshireedge.com. This is the Berkshire Edge on air, and we welcome in David and Marcy again this morning. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
David says we're over the edge as well.
I think we've all gone, not over the edge, off the cliff.
I don't think.
Yes.
We did a show, The Glass Cliff, so I think people, if we're off the cliff, it's just a bunch of lemmings, actually. So.
Well, stories are available 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, updated all
they
the time
are.
At theberkshireedge.com. And we
and
just touch
on yeah, also,
yes.
berkshirescalendar.com magazine.
And we just touch on really a fraction of what you can find. They give us some of the highlights, and we go from there. And we'll start off with what I found to be a really interesting article, and that is the homeless man, the so-called homeless mayor of Main Street, missing in action in Great Barrington.
Now, this man, David Magadini, you know, when we first started The Edge in 2014, we did an article about David Magadini, whom everybody has seen around town. And nobody knew who he was, or most people didn't know who he was. And we did an article about him, and it got, enormous readership. everybody wanted to know who this man was. And now, David just told me, it's 8:30 in the morning, and we already have about more than 3,000 people who've read that article. So, This man is an institution. He is homeless by choice, actually. He owned a house, which is now in shambles and probably condemned, right? He owned a house, and he walked away from it because he refused to pay the water bill because he believed that water should be free. And he has lived on the streets ever since. He's a local man. He apparently, has some wherewithal, but he chooses to live on the streets. And now nobody has seen him for months, and we discovered that he's in a rehab center in Great Barrington, having been hit by a van on Route 7 in July.
Right. He's perpetually, the listeners to the show can't see the photo that we've printed of him, but he wears winter and summer this ragged heavy parka, and he pushes a grocery cart with all his belongings in it. And he sleeps wherever he can. He sleeps in the park behind Town Hall.
Although he was evicted from the gazebo in 2015.
Yeah. And he's, but he has some help. There's a local minister who helps him find a shelter in case it's really awful cold weather. But he's really an institution. He went to college. Has a college degree.
And he has run for moderator of the town meeting several times. And
he goes to town meeting. In fact, he shows up at our office sometimes asking for a ride to town meeting. So,
And he writes letters to the editors of the local
paper. He goes to the library and types them out. And he shows up at selectmen's meetings, too. So,
no one wants to sit anywhere near him because he smells. Horrible.
Yeah, yeah. So. That's another problem. But.
The places where he is welcome, or at least allowed, have become fewer and fewer. He can't go to the library anymore because he has been unruly and failed to leave when the library closed. I think the post office, which used to leave its lobby open all night, now closes the lobby right after 5 o'clock because he was sleeping there. So there are, there are places he can't go anymore, so he's quite limited. He has soiled a number of public bathrooms very badly as well. So So he's not, I mean, he appears lovable, but he has serious problems. But anyway, he is he's a local institution, and obviously people are very curious about why they haven't seen him.
Yeah.
All right, that is the mayor of Main Street found,
The mayor of Main Street.
Yes.
Found.
Okay. In rehab.
But anyway, people should go to the edge and take a look at him, because this is a picture. You can see that the leaves are on the trees. It's summer, and he's dressed in his raggedy winter clothes with his grocery cart and blankets on top of it. So, if you've driven through Great Barrington, you may very well have seen him yourself.
All right. Well, we'll go from the mayor of Main Street to the exit of possibly of horse racing due to the opposition that came about after there was a proposal.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is, there's been some talk of restoring horse racing to the fairgrounds, the Great Barrington Fairgrounds, which was historically was the agricultural showplace for the town, and had a track, and it's been in some disrepair in the last few years. But a couple bought the fairgrounds, and Bart Elsbach and Janet, and they fixed it up, and they repaired the grandstand and the track, and they now have events there, or they can have events there. And so there was some talk of there was Suffolk Downs near Boston had an eye on this track, that they might expand the racing season at the track again for a couple of months in the late summer and early fall. But that proposal has roused up a lot of opposition based on the reputation of horse racing as being animal cruelty, and also because it seemed that if there was no local control, it would not the way that was fashioned in the state, with state legislation allowing this, would override local permitting. So our state senator, Adam Hines, withdrew his support for this idea. But I can remember watching races at the fairgrounds years ago, and this is a low level track, and the horses are not of the highest caliber, and I know a bit about horse racing and horses, and at this level of racing, they are the horses are given what's called butazolidine, doesn't allow them to feel any pain in their hoofs.
It's not only at that level. There's unscrupulous trainers that do this on every level, and I mean right up to the top. It's not in the lower levels of racing.
Well, look at what just happened out in California, in Santa Anita. Where I think there were in the last month, there have been 11 horses killed.
Well, that was because they resurfaced the track and they did it wrong, and they didn't have brains enough to pull it back up and fix it. Horse racing is a subject that is so entangled with so many nefarious characters, along with very good characters, might I say, but the nefarious characters that treat the animals horrible set the pattern for people not to like horse racing.
Certainly. Well, the basic problem with horse racing, frankly, is that they race them when they're 2 years old. Horses should not be ridden or raced or in any performance until they're three, because their bones are not yet knit. They're too young to be raced on hard tracks or any other kind of performance, for that matter. they need to you know, they need to grow and mature, and but you know, to have the expense of keeping a horse for another year while it continues to mature is, you know, it's costly.
Any reputable trainer will do that, though. It's the non-reputable ones, and there are a lot of them. There's a lot of them, but any reputable trainer will train them for 2 years until they're three. Just train, not horse race, not drive them, but train them. It's like I said, there's so many nefarious characters that are involved in these things nowadays. That people have a right to get upset and you know what, voice their opinion. It's just a simple thing.
Well, they have.
yeah. And you know what? That's what the country's all about. That's what we're about. We're like making sausage. It's not the prettiest thing in the world, but the sausage tastes good in the end. All right.
Yep.
So let's go on. This is a story that I mentioned on the air, and I gave you guys credit for it, and that is Bard College at Simon's Rock. Classes were canceled after a student had been assaulted on campus.
Yeah, this is very upsetting, in part because David's son is a student at Simon's Rock, and we live, you know, very close to it. But all kinds of rumors started on Friday afternoon. It seems that a student, an African-American student, was dragged into the woods, it's unclear by whom, and assaulted and was cut up quite a bit and was in the hospital by Friday night. We think she's out. I mean, we think that she wasn't seriously physically hurt. But the first rumors was that she had actually gone into the woods and cut herself. That was quickly replaced by more reliable information that somebody had dragged her into the woods, and now the police are involved. At any rate, and apparently, again, we're still getting information ourselves. There were also all kinds of graffiti, both racist and anti-Semitic graffiti, showing up on the Simon's Rock campus. And so Simon's Rock suspended classes for this week in order to deal with this. And next week is their semester break anyway. So now there are no classes for 2 weeks, and the administration is trying to figure out how this happened and how to, you know, make the students feel more comfortable.
It's the state of America, unfortunately.
Well, yes, as a matter of fact.
Yeah. I mean,
it has a kind of ring to it.
Don't want to beat a dead horse, but it's just so obvious. And I get into arguments with some people all the time, but it's just obvious. The attitude in this country has retrograded, and it's going to take a while to turn it around again. It just is.
Well, you know what? The country, when they elected a black president, Barack Obama, the country had a nervous breakdown. That's what I think happened.
Yeah.
A collective nervous breakdown.
You're not that far off. I want to go on to the to your next story, and I joked around about this a little earlier today. Our meteorologist, Pat Pagano, was Italian, so I was asking him what he was doing for Columbus Day, and then I said, oh, pardon me, Indigenous Peoples Day. he wasn't doing anything for it anyways, but then we forgot the names of the Nina, Pinta, and Santa Maria, which made it even more embarrassing. But your story, getting back to that, is after an appeal from Multicultural Bridge reinvented Columbus Day as Indigenous Peoples Day.
Well, this is just in Great Barrington. They just they wanted to acknowledge, you know, the other side of the story of Columbus's visit to America or discovery of America, although he didn't really discover America. Arrival. This of course aroused lots of frantic objections, but nevertheless, Great Barrington is the select board has plowed ahead with this notion of renaming Columbus Day as Indigenous Peoples Day.
Well, you know what?
Well, the question is whether Connecticut, whether you guys will follow suit. What are you guys
so
doing? What are you guys doing about it?
I think certain towns and certain cities in the state, like in New York State, have done that as well. My feeling is I think an Indigenous Peoples Day is fine. And if you want to celebrate Columbus Day, celebrate Columbus Day. But there's nothing wrong with me, to me, to having an Indigenous Peoples Day as well. It just isn't at all. Yeah, no, If you want to support Columbus Day, support Columbus Day. I mean, it's your right, and you can celebrate it. But also, just remember, there's other people in the world. Okay.
And they were here first.
That's exactly right. All right.
Well, it's funny because about 10 years ago, maybe longer, I was when I was still working in public television, I tried to develop a series on Italian Americans. And so I was very involved in the Italian American community in New York and around the country for a while. And Columbus Day is all of the activities in the Italian American community seem to take place around Columbus Day. You know, every Italian American organization has an event in October. I mean, October is incredibly busy for Italian Americans. They take the opportunity to sort of coalesce around Columbus Day. So this will be very difficult. I mean, it's not just that they are celebrating that an Italian discovered the New World, but it has become an institution, not a bad one. It has become a way of sort of organizing their communal calendars, and I think it's good for states that have big Italian American populations, like Connecticut. I know Connecticut has a very big one,
and so does New York.
It's going to be difficult. I mean, in New York, look, we have Columbus Circle, we have the parade that goes by Columbus Circle, we have. Any number of organizations in New York. So it's not going to be so easy to move away from it.
Well, I wonder why the Norwegians don't get in. because Leif Erikson was here long before Columbus ever got funding for his from the Queen of Spain to get his.
The Norwegians have Garrison Keillor.
We can't celebrate those days because we'd have to plunder, and we can't plunder on us.
The Norwegians didn't plunder, did they?
They might have. Who knows?
They might have plundered a little bit.
Back in the old.
Why come so far and not do a little?
Not plunder. I mean,
back in the old days, they might have plundered.
It's like being invited to dinner and not eating.
What's the point?
What's the point?
All right, let's go on to the Fairview Hospital. We only have enough. Four or five minutes left.
Our own humor, obviously.
That's right. The director of the hospital surgical department.
Yeah, speaking of humor, this is a very funny film done by a local videographer named Ben Hillman. Fairview Hospital is such a treasured institution here,
we're so lucky to have it.
It's a small rural hospital, but it's very high quality. It wins all kinds of awards. And for those of us who live, within 20 miles of it, it's a treasure. I mean, it's the place that you go. I mean, if your doctor's not in his office, you go to the Fairview Emergency Room. When you have something really serious, you start there, and they figure out where you go next. They have a terrific emergency room. So the Fairview Gala is really, it's their annual fundraiser in September, and it's a major event. And this year they honored a very interesting guy named George Vinoglu, who was originally from Egypt. An immigrant, right.
Now, the question is whether he would have whether he would have been able to get in now.
No, probably not.
Probably not.
But anyway, he is also an institution, and so the Fairview hired Ben Hillman to create a video that was shown at the gala, and
it's hilarious,
and it's we just thought that it was worth sharing. So it's very funny, and he's a very funny filmmaker, and it's with Dr. Vina Glue on his motorcycle, accompanied by Hell's Angels who protect him.
Protect him and get him to the hospital in short order.
All right, we have about 2 minutes left, and we want to do Carol Owens, and we also want to remember Michael Ballon. Let's do Michael Ballon, because really he is, the name instantly pops into your head, the Castle Street Cafe.
Yeah, the Castle Street Cafe. And Michael really started the farm-to-table movement in the Berkshires when he opened his restaurant.
He was a big advocate for local agriculture, and he featured in his recipes, you know, the products of the local farmers, and especially the sustainable agricultural movement. And it's really a shame that he passed away last week.
He'd had a terrible health problem. He had had facial cancer, and actually about 10 years ago it had part of his jawbone removed. And I think he thought he was in remission. He sold his restaurant. He married a woman that he had been in love with for 40 years, and for various circumstances they hadn't been together, and so he had every prospect of having a wonderful retirement. And then he developed Lou Gehrig's disease, ALS, and the cancer recurred. He died last week.
Yeah.
At the age of either 62 or 63, we have to figure that out. Too young.
And then very quickly, remembering Mary Flynn?
Yes.
Oh, yes, Mary Flynn.
It's a very funny article.
She's great. She was the conscience of Stockbridge. And she would she was an elderly spinster who was who would come to town meeting, and she was a teacher. In Dalton, Mass, but even though she was from Stockbridge. But she would come, and she had many, many wonderful causes in Stockbridge. She had the trail along the Housatonic River was her creation. And she would come to town meeting and remind the select board of what is ethical behavior. And she was quite something. And everybody were kind of intimidated by her, although she was a slight and extremely polite, but fiercely loyal to Stockbridge. I mean, she was, you know, you couldn't say anything badly about Stockbridge without encountering some reaction from Mary Flynn. She was quite something. So anyways, we have a profile of her. Written by one of our columnists, Carol Owens, who used to visit her, I think, faithfully every week, and they would have tea together.
Well, I can just tell you one thing. I grew up being taught by school moms, and as light as they were and as thin as small as
they were
you
tough.
You didn't mess with school moms, I can tell you.
Well, you know, I once had an editorial writer whom I worked with who had had her in for history when he was in high school, and he would literally start quaking just at the mention of her name, even many years later.
We have to wrap this up now, but my first understanding of what a yardstick was not to measure, but it was to hit. Okay. All right, guys. TheBerkshireEdge.com, TheBerkshireEdge.com. We'll speak to you guys again next week.
Okay.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
That is this week's edition of The Berkshire Edge on Air.